Back into another episode of the Dapped on Draft podcast. I've returned. I am back from a day of driving from Indiana, where my in-laws live. So didn't have a whole lot of time to take off and record yesterday. But thank you again to Dalton for covering that solo pod. Without further ado, Dalton, welcome back to the pod. I know you've got quite a bit going on traveling wise in the next couple of days as well. But you're here today, and I'm happy to have you here.
Yep, here today, and I will be somewhere else tomorrow, but you guys will still see my beautiful face. So that's all that really matters, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So in typical fashion,
the testosterone molecule shirt is not making the trip with me, but it is here tonight if you guys are watching on YouTube.
I love it. But in typical Wednesday fashion, I guess not last week we didn't because we did the mock draft. But in typical Wednesday fashion, we are going to be doing our Dapped Draft. So again, we're going to have two different topics today, whether or not we're buying or selling this topic as the 2025 NFL Draft gets nearer by the week. And at this is the point in the season where like, oh, it's time to start writing reports. It's time to start final. Like we've seen like enough tape on some guys. Again, there are some guys, Benjamin Morrison, Notre Dame, that just happened with. Out for the season. Siobhan Revelle, out for the season. Joshua Simmons, who had some OT1 hype, now out for the season. So, and then there's guys like Harold Fannin. I'm probably going to hold off on him because he's a true junior and he just might go back to school. But
yeah,
there are some guys we can write final reports on at this point. I guess Josh Simmons technically could too, or Benjamin Morrison, but I think it's pretty well documented that Morrison specifically is probably coming out. So we can start writing some of these reports. So the stakes are getting a little bit higher on these Dapped Drafts because they're becoming less and less hypothetical and more concrete. And again, it's only mid-October, so it's still pretty hypothetical, but we're getting there day by day. But the first one, we're going to start down in Austin, Texas, where one quarterback made his return and another quarterback returned to the bench in the backup role where he had been prior to the injury of Quinn Ewers. I watched this game and charted it, as I do every quarterback game of draft eligible prospects, to just see how accurate they are. And Quinn Ewers was not very good in this football game. Texas won by a lot. They won by a lot. But Quinn Ewers didn't have to throw a whole lot of passes in that second half because, I mean, they snapped off two huge runs in the second quarter, right near half, and the game was over by halftime. But Ewers beyond 10 yards in this game, it was ugly, where he wasn't throwing screens or bubbles or whatever. I have him charted on throws beyond 15 yards as 1 of 6. Only threw beyond 15 yards 6 times and completed one of them. So beyond 10 yards, I have him as 3 of 10, 3 of 11. So,
and that's not completions. That's on target percentage, right? Yeah.
Correct. Yes. Yeah. So that's not very good. And that's coming off of a game where Arch Manning played Mississippi State. And again, Mississippi State's not a very good program right now. But Arch Manning looked like he could be drafted first overall this year in that game, in my opinion. He was doing some things in that game. It's like, yeah, that's QB1 stuff. And we've had our reservations on Quinn Ewers on this podcast. And I don't think those are going away, especially not after a performance like that. So the first Dapped Draft, Dalton. Dapped Draft, Texas will, I'm trying to think how to phrase this. Dapped Draft, Texas will not win a natty with Quinn Ewers, but would with Arch Manning at quarterback.
Oh, that makes it really difficult. I do think that they are probably,
well, they have best. A better chance at winning a natty with Arch Manning rather than Quinn Ewers.
I think they quite possibly do. And I know that Quinn has a lot of experience and has a lot of experience with Sark. But at the end of the day, when I watch these guys, and not just when I watch these guys, but this is very much feeling like an Oklahoma situation with
Rattler,
Spencer Rattler and Caleb Williams. because we're looking at the fans are starting to notice this finally. Because when you're winning football games and your quarterback is on the field, it doesn't really matter how good or bad he is playing, especially when he's coming out and they're playing well in big games like they did last year, going into, you know, the college football playoffs. But you're starting to see fans from the Texas Longhorns sideline, or in the stands, and start to tweet and start to cast a little bit of doubt on Quinn Ewers. And I think once that starts to happen, and you have somebody like Arch, not just like Arch the player, but Arch the surround, what surrounds him, the aura that surrounds him because of who he is, it's really hard to look at that, look at the way that he played against Mississippi State, and then look at how Quinn Ewers played against Oklahoma, and he will have more opportunities in the SEC to prove himself throughout the rest of the year. Maybe he was just a little bit rusty coming off of injury. But that Oklahoma football team is bad right now because they are really, really injured on both sides of the ball for Oklahoma. They're just not a very good football team right now. So that score was even less indicative of how different those two teams were. It should have been a bigger win. And in the first half, you had fans tweeting, man, this lead would be huge right now if it wasn't for Quinn Ewers killing drives. He was killing drives early on when this game was still in hand. And so when the fans start to talk a little bit, it becomes easier for your football coach to, if Quinn Ewers lays a couple of stinkers in the next couple of weeks, if games that should not be close become close, you will probably see Arch Manning towards the end of the year in SEC play going into the conference. Because I think at some point, you have to make that move before your best opportunity to win a national championship. Because if yours just like doesn't play well in the past last couple of weeks, what do you do at that point? What if it's week 13, week 14, and he starts to play poorly after a couple of good weeks? And then you're thinking, well, we got to throw Arch Manning in the SEC championship game or in the college football playoff.
Yeah,
I think that you might want to even split time a little bit here, and that's probably not a popular opinion, but get Arch a couple of reps during the games so you get that in-game SEC experience against not Mississippi State. That's if you don't want to throw him to the Wolves as the full-time starter.
Yeah.
But I think you and I both are buying that we just don't buy Quinn Ewers at all.
No, not at all. I think people, and I don't want to be one of those people who's like, oh, casuals don't know what they're seeing. Like, I never want to be that kind of person because I want to invite like people who just watch casually and want to grow into like a draft content role to like, that's what this podcast, the site's for. But I think there's a consensus that he's a big arm. And I don't think we've ever had that consensus either. I think we're pretty agreeable on that. And I think he showed a lot. Like he's stretching even like 5 yard hash from the out, like 5 yard hooks from the opposite hash, like 5 yard stops. It's taken some time for the ball to get there. I can do the fun arm angles and stuff like that. But what's more concerning to me is that like he's getting clear out concepts against the exact defensive looks that he likes, and he's checking the football down. Like he's getting overs on clear out concepts wide open, and he's not throwing the football against four man fronts. Like there's no extra men in the box. There's no extra pressure coming. His feet just look uncomfortable to me. And in this game, he completed 20 passes, 16 of them were within 4 yards of the line of scrimmage. So like, I don't know, man. Like he's got
Jordan. And that is a huge part. And part of that is just Sark's offense. That is the way that Sark operates his offense. But Arch was slinging it.
He has one rep against Mississippi State in particular where there's six in the box and he knows which free rusher is his, and he throws the ball 40 yards down the field, anticipates the pressure, takes the hit, and drops it in the bucket 40 yards downfield. Like that's the style of difference. And yeah, like this is part of Sark's offense where like he makes his checkdowns, he makes his hots really reliable and really accessible. Yeah. But it has to be driving him crazy when he's dialing up clear outs, when he's dialing up these concepts, and there's green grass all around the receiver and Ewers is checking the football down. Like, that has to be driving him crazy.
Yeah.
And I think it goes on to playing in the SEC and their schedule as well. Like, this late in the season, yes, Texas is undefeated. Can a two-loss Texas team make the playoffs if they lose both these games this late in the season without an SEC championship game? Like, they play Georgia next week. That's a pretty big game. And then their schedule is pretty okay from there on out. I mean, they got Vanderbilt the week after that, who can be kind of catchy. They can catch you. But then that Florida, Arkansas. Well,
Vanderbilt can just control the football and you never see it.
Correct. Yep. And then Kentucky. But then they close the season with Texas A&M, who's playing some pretty good football with Wigman back in the lineup now.
And at least Kentucky's defense is fantastic.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. So, like, if they say they lose to Georgia next week and then they lose to Texas A&M November 30th and they don't make the SEC championship game, do they still get that 12 spot? Like, do they still get a top 12 seed? I think they probably do.
Yeah.
You're not getting home field advantage, and now you're really behind the eight ball. Like, I don't think they have the schedule to just rely on Ewers if this is the kind of output they get on tape consistently. Like, if he goes out and lays an egg against Georgia next week, I think you have to really.
I think so too. I think if he does not play well against Georgia, I think you have to. And it kind of sucks for them that Georgia is the next team that they play, because it's a really good defense. Kirby Smart is a fantastic defensive-minded head coach. Mm-hmm. It will be a struggle for Quinn Ewers. If he goes out and he plays well, that's fantastic. He's, you know, just shaking the rust off. Mm-hmm. But you and I are both, and it's probably a little bit unfair for us to say, like, we can't get it done, but because they did it last year. The problem with that was they didn't play this schedule last year. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think, the biggest difference.
Yeah, and they played a Bama. I would agree with that. I would definitely agree with that. So I think we're both in agreement that, like, if the Georgia game doesn't go well, you've got Vandy, Florida, Arkansas to maybe get some reps for Arch before we get to Kentucky and Texas A&M to close the season. Two pretty good teams there to close. Because, I mean, Texas A&M's defensive front and their secondary now, too, is playing pretty, pretty well. Yeah. So
we'll leave the third, man.
Yeah.
Keep an eye on him with all these corners coming off of not coming off the board, but serious injuries. Mm-hmm. Willie the third coming up.
Yeah. All right. Second after draft. And we're going to keep this just to two after drafts. And we're going to make this tight end centric, because this has turned out.
Texas again.
Texas again. Yeah. This is becoming a pretty fun tight end class. We went from, like, offseason, oh, this could be a really good tight end class with guys like Oscar Delp and Mitchell Evans and some names like that, to like, oh, this tight end class isn't very good because those guys have been not very good this year. To now, like, oh, it could be a good tight end class because now we have guys like Harold Fannin and Gunnar Helm and Tyler Warren playing well, in addition to Colson Loveland. So, like, this after draft, Dalton, happened in 2017 when OJ Howard, David Njoku, Evan Engram all went round one. After draft, we see three tight ends come off the board in the first round for the first time since 2017.
I really want to draft this. I really do. And in this class specifically, I think it could happen, because it is not a very talent latent class at the top. It is specifically at the top at positions of value. My issue with it is I don't know how Gunnar Helm is going to test. I think he's going to test well. The problem is I don't know that for sure. Mm-hmm. And if there's a position where athletic testing is absolutely crucial, that's the one. And so I'm going to draft this, mm-hmm. even though when I watch Harold Fannin Jr. play, I'm like, yes, we could draft him in the first round as an offensive weapon. I think he's going to test very well. But 6'3", 240. I mean, we're looking at, like, Njoku land, and Njoku went at the back end of the first round. But I just think he is more probably a day two guy for the NFL. I think Tyler Warren at this point is starting to show that he is a potential day one guy. I think the Kansas City Chiefs are going to end up with Colson Loveland, and we're all going to hate ourselves for the next decade as he becomes the new Travis Kelce for Patrick Mahomes. And so I do see two of them going in the first round. And I think Gunnar Helm is tight end one for me. But I don't know how he will test. And until I know how he will test, I cannot bank on there being three tight ends drafted in round one.
If you told me top 45 to 50, I think. If you told me top 50, I think.
If you told me four in the top 45, I would say yes. I would say draft. Because I think all those guys are top 50 guys. Like, unquestionably, for me, top 50 guys.
Yeah. I wonder if Fannin's body type is going to be NFL. Like, if the NFL is going to love that. But I think he's pretty similar to, like, Sam LaPorta. And Sam LaPorta went top 40 in terms of body type.
Yeah.
I mean, let me double check on Sam LaPorta's body type here. Let's see. 6'3", 245. I mean, not too far off there. 6'3", 6032, 245. I think that's probably around what
Fannin throws his body around as a blocker, yeah, too. So it's not like he can't do that. I think he's a better blocker than Tyler Warren is. Warren's 260. Yeah. But, I mean, that's just body type matters, especially when you're going to test the way that Tyler Warren's going to test coming out of Penn State.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm going to draft it too, but I'm closer to drafting it than I feel. It's such a
Don't know where the first rounders are coming from in this class.
And that's a good point. And especially the corners, because everybody
says, because all the corners are getting hurt.
Yeah. And just the intel that I've been hearing is like the NFL's not even that high on Benjamin Morrison as like draft picks are anyway. And now he's slight body framed and he's got a hip injury. Like, that's different than an ACL.
A hip injury that requires surgery.
It requires surgery. Like, ACLs are routine these days. So a September ACL, like Revel's case, like he's going to go first round still. Morrison? I don't know about that. I don't know where, because I don't think it's coming from the quarterback position.
No.
I don't think it's coming from the offensive tackle position. I don't think it's coming from the corner position.
Or
edge. And those are four premium positions that we're all saying like they haven't lived up to hype.
Three offensive tackles / guards.
Williams, Kelvin Banks, Will Campbell.
Yeah.
Maybe Emery.
So we have four.
I mean, Josh Simmons probably not anymore.
No, I can't, not after the injury.
So yeah, where are they?
Because I didn't think his tape was good enough before the injury for me personally.
The Iowa game was really good, I thought, but
yeah.
I haven't watched the Ohio State Oregon game yet, so I don't know how he played like, after the injury, but
in that edge. Game,
but
you've
the edge Shorten, class is starting to come around.
You have Shorten, like, you have Carter, you have Pierre.
Picking it back up. I mean, yeah, but then after those three, I mean, yeah. I don't think either of the Ohio State edges are first round talents.
No, no. They got dominated. And
two tackles that we both said are.
Exactly. And JT had a couple of decent pass rushes against Connerly, but Connerly absolutely dominated him in the run game. And that's something I did not expect going into that matchup.
Which that's a merit to Connerly, because I do think Connerly has been playing a little bit better over the past couple of weeks. But so it's not coming from edge. Defensive tackle outside of Mason Graham and Dion and maybe Tyleek Williams.
Yeah.
I don't think Kenneth Grant's a first rounder, but he might go first round because again, where are they coming from? So you're right, the tight end position might be where, because I couldn't name a first round linebacker right now either.
No. How many
first round safety?
How many wide receivers?
Three. Bond, McMillan, and Burden.
Yeah.
Anybody?
Agnoka, maybe Stewart.
Maybe four? Maybe five and Stewart. Yeah. So we could see some wide receivers rise, but I mean, as good of a game as Evan Stewart had, that his body type scares the crap out of me. And like, just kind of his scheme reliability scares the crap out of me a little bit too. Like, scheme dependency scares the crap out of me a little bit too. But
yeah, but I think I understand that. But I think when we see guys like Jameson Williams having a lot of success at the NFL level, that it quells those concerns a little bit for me.
Yeah. I thought Jameson was a pretty good route runner, like nuanced route runner coming out, but I get it a little bit too. So, I mean, I'll draft it, but I'm really close to drafting it because again, once the combine happens, like, even though Tyler Warren can't block at 6'6", 260, I mean, you're going to tell me somebody's going to see a 6'6", 260 pound tight end who's going to run a 4.5 and lead to probably 39 inches that they're not going to take that guy first round? Like,
he's going first round. And they're going, you know what they're going to say? He's a former quarterback. He didn't block until college.
Yep.
Yeah, he's never blocked a soul until college.
So I don't think it'll be Fannin, but I think Warren. Helm's kind of the wild card here, because I do think somebody will bite on Loveland, even though he's not my cup of tea at tight end.
Yeah.
I think somebody will bite on Loveland, especially if Kansas City's there, because I mean they've been using that type of tight end for a decade now, and they've got proven success with that type of tight end. Helm is the wild card. I think he's tight end one too. I think he's more agile I don't think he's explosive, but I think he's a strider. So like, it wouldn't surprise me if he hit like 4.59, 4.62.
Yeah. I mean, I think I've kind of been on record of the 4.65. I think he's more smooth than he is fast, but I think smooth is fast.
He ran a corner route on a safety, or it might've been a nickel, or I think it was a safety. He ran a corner route on a safety against Oklahoma where he left the dude in the shoes.
Yeah.
That weekend. So,
well, it was probably
Billy Bowman.
Yeah, it was probably Billy Bowman.
You are not a Billy Bowman guy. No. Oh, man.
There's a safety every year that I watch that I'm just like, this guy cannot play football. And to their credit, a couple of years ago, it was starting safety for Indy, played for Utah.
Julian Blackman.
I watched him play. I was like, this guy, he doesn't have the physicality to play at the NFL. He just like did not want it at all in college, and then he came out and he ended up being a really good pro. So, you know, I'm gonna miss every now and then on these guys, but Billy Bowman, not a guy I think I'm gonna miss, because Julian Blackman, it was never athleticism or coverage ability that was an issue. It was the desire to hit somebody. Billy Bowman doesn't have any of it, unfortunately. So
it wasn't Billy Bowman, it was their free safety Spears Jennings that got routed up.
Oh, Spears but Jennings is a good athlete. He got so that's okay.
Helm on that one play. So, okay. Man, now I'm closer to drafting this than drafting it. No, I'm going to draft it. Let's draft it.
Go ahead and draft it. I'm going to draft it. You can draft it. I'll disagree here.
Because I do think, like, Gus or Jim Harbaugh, if he doesn't get Janty, like, if Jim Harbaugh doesn't get his hands on Janty, like, you can't tell me that.
Yeah. It sucks to draft this because I want to draft it, because I genuinely love this tight end class, and that matters. Because I hate tight ends. Like,
I love tight ends.
It's a position that, like, I like it. Like, I like what they can do at the NFL level. I like the versatility of these guys. But I never, like, for college tight ends, there's such a niche usage for them, for the most part, at the college level that you just don't get at the pro level. And so a lot of the times it's kind of tough. But we have guys this year. Tyler Warren, I know that he doesn't block very well, but that body type, you can teach that body type to block. And then Gunnar Helm can legitimately do it all and plays in line a lot as a traditional NFL tight end. Fannin is more of that H-back, but you can find ways to use that. Plus, he is an absolute target hog already. He's got a magnet to him. They want to get him the ball, and he deserves to get the ball, obviously, in that Bowling Green offense. But I think that he can be that sort of guy at the NFL level, too, because he's so good after the catch. And then you have Loveland, who is just going to be Kansas City Chief.
It does feel that way. It just feels that way.
Yeah. He feels perfect for it, especially with Kelsey at the end of his career.
Yeah. But, and to the Warren point as well, like, David Njoku couldn't block shit when he first came in the NFL either.
No.
And he's
not 260.
No, he's not. And then he, in 2020, they signed Austin Hooper and they drafted Harrison Bryant, and he bought in. And now he was a Pro Bowl tight end last year. If he had a better quarterback this year, he might be on that pace this year as well. But one of the more well-rounded tight ends.
I'm told that EPA is not a quarterback stat.
Okay. Yeah, we'll see about that. But yeah, so I think you can absolutely teach Tyler Warren how to block, because a guy that smooth and that fluid at 260 pounds is unbelievable to be able to do what
he can. He's so explosive.
I mean, I charted that game earlier today, and he had 80 yards on an average depth of target of probably a yard. 80 yards receiving on probably an average depth of target of a yard in that game to start that game before that double pass that he lost that defensive back on. But yeah, he's a fun athlete for sure.
All right, you're drafting it. I'm dafting it. You guys will see me next time from Pennsylvania, not Portugal. I guess I really like the peas. I never noticed that before, but born in Pennsylvania, living in Portugal, going back to Pennsylvania for a little while. It is what it is. This has been Daft or Draft on the Daft on Draft podcast. Had a lot of fun. I don't know what we're going to do tomorrow yet.
Yeah, we'll figure it out. If we're going to build a prospect, or if we're going to maybe talk some sleepers, start building our board a little bit. We'll
see. I think that might be a little bit of an idea. Talk about some guys that we like who are under the radar prospects, maybe. All right. That's what we might do, but we will figure it all out outside of this call. As always, I am Dalton Miller. He is Corey Kinnon. I love you guys. Goodbye.